Welcome back, everybody, to the Triad of the Forest podcast, a podcast from Puerto Rican friends coming together to do deep dives into Star Wars and other nerd-related media. These are our Bad Batch Fridays. We know the title's stupid, but we don't care.
Yeah. We're not creative like other people
not
in,
at all.
This,
like,
in this group
like
right now.
Somebody joining us.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, we are very excited to be talking about the season premiere of the third and final season of The Bad Batch, episodes 1, 2, and 3. And we are very excited to be joined in this conversation by our good friend Molly Damon from Star Wars Explained. Welcome back to the
channel. Hi, Molly.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
It's great. No, last time we had you on the show, it was also for a season premiere. I think it was for Mando. It was a great time. Haven't seen you since Dragon Con. Yeah, so it's been a minute back in our little boxes. So
it's not the same.
Mm-mm. It's not.
No.
But you know, but it's fine. At least we can get together. How's it going? We've seen that there's lots of changes that are going on Star Wars Explained. So how's 2024 treating you so far?
It's been good so far. You know, for a while there, we weren't sure when we were getting what show and where and how.
Right.
And mm-hmm. So once we got the date for Bad Batch, I was like, a huge sigh of relief.
Mm-hmm.
So that we can start planning for that. But
yeah,
no, 2024 has been good so far. I've been trying to upgrade a lot of stuff for the channel. I'm upgrading my editing skills a little bit, so that's
been
fun.
Oh, we've noticed.
It's all been really fun so far this year. We've been changing up our background a lot, and it's been a fun new year so far.
Great, and awesome. You know, it's definitely seen all the changes / improvements that the channel has had. So that's really really cool. So yeah, like excited. It's definitely been a year for, like, I feel we're still in February, February's almost over, and I feel that we're six months into 2024, and it's only been 2 months, so I feel like a freight train has ran into me. I feel worse than a Dragon Con hangover. On the positive end, at least we have the Bad Batch, we've only seen 3 episodes. We know that you've been privy to see a little bit more. So we'll get into that when we do. But
my lips on that.
It's very interesting to feel so good about the Bad Batch coming back, even though these 3 episodes were anything but an upper.
Yeah, it was grim.
Yes.
Yeah.
But it still feels good to have Star Wars back.
I know, and good Star Wars. That was good.
And good Star Wars. It's just like Lucasfilm Animation don't miss, except on Resistance.
What are you having in Resistance?
We're a positive channel here.
That's fine. A whole other video.
I'm not the target audience for Resistance. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's okay.
You don't have to love everything.
I don't have to love everything. And it's fine. It's fine. Mm-hmm. It's okay. But before we get going with Bad Batch, some news, and we don't know if it's real news, because if it doesn't come out of Lucasfilm, we can't say that it's a real. But I think Collider informed this week that allegedly The Acolyte, the show that we're most excited for, that's coming out this year, is allegedly coming out on June 5th, mm-hmm. which is horrible timing, selfishly, I might say, for myself, for this premiere. But other than that, but cool, right? We got Acolyte in the summer. Molly, how do you feel about High Republic, Acolyte, and like everything that comes with this? This is a show that you're looking forward to.
Oh, I'm so psyched for this show to come out. I would love a June drop date for this. I know Bad Batch is ending around May 4th, and we were thinking maybe we would get an announcement right at the end of Bad Batch to see when the next show was coming, and a lot of people were speculating that Acolyte would be the big summer hit show for Star Wars. So this isn't surprising news to me. I hope it's true, and I am very very excited for High Republic. I love all the High Republic books. I haven't read all of them. I'm not Alex. I don't read every single thing that comes out, but I've read most of them, and it's it's been such a breath of fresh air for Star Wars.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I also don't read all of them. I read as slow enough as it is. So I do just the YA and adult novels and the main High Republic run. I ain't got time for the Young Jedi Adventures, even though I've seen some of those episodes and they're fun. Or the, what's the other comic that DJO does? Whatever. Those? I don't have time for those.
I don't follow all the comics. But
it's too much. It's too much. It's too much.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It's a lot. It's a lot.
Mm-hmm. I just want Nani to see the trailer.
Yeah, because I didn't get to go to Celebration, so.
I've been so tempted to send you the bootleg version of it, but it's just, we don't support bootlegs on this channel anyway.
I'll be honest. It's worth it to watch it HD.
I'll
be honest, though. I've watched the bootleg a couple of times.
it's so exciting.
Just to remind myself how awesome
it's going to be.
Yeah.
The ending. It's all about the end. I mean, the whole thing is awesome. That's the ending. Mm-hmm. I've said it a million times, and I'll say it a million more. When the ending of that trailer was about to start, and all the, you know, and that thing is happening, I'm like, are they going to do the thing?
Are they going to do the thing?
And then they do the thing. And I'm like, oh my God, Jesus Christ. But anyway, that's The Acolyte. That's still a couple months away. It's fine. We can wait. We've waited enough, and it'll be great. It'll be great. Hopefully Bob Iger doesn't cancel it because he is cutting back on DEI, apparently. So we'll see what happens.
We will riot in the streets if Bob Iger cancels The Acolyte.
The Acolyte.
No more Disney Plus subscription. You can take Willow from us, but you cannot take DEI. Or Jedi, I guess.
At least show it to us first, and then if you want to take it, fine. Like, that's what they did with Willow, so.
Or let us know that you are going to take it out so we can just record it. Just get some Blu-rays, record that, and then maybe sell it on Etsy or something.
Right.
But Bad Batch, the Bad Bitch, I guess. That was a bad New Zealand accent. I'm sorry. Bad Bitch. It's back.
Terrible.
It's back, and it's... Yeah. And it's good. Like, it's good.
Yeah.
Coming into season 3, though, there's obviously all the baggage from season 1, season 2. So kind of as a recap, not of what happened, but of how you guys have felt. And I start with you. Like, how did you feel about Bad Batch when it started versus season 2? And what has been your level of excitement now going into the final season?
Yeah. So as has been famously stated in this podcast over and over again, I wasn't originally a fan of the animated stuff. I hadn't even watched it until we started doing the podcast, and then eventually fell in love with Clone Wars and Rebels and all of it. So by the time we got to the Bad Batch, I was in love with the style of animation and with the story and everything. And it just felt like such a natural continuation of the Clone Wars story. And then from the perspective of these troopers that are more like a family and, you know, all their hijinks and, you know, kind of trying to, you know, race this girl and them not knowing like what they already had, like their group dynamics all set. And then she comes in, like destroys that dynamic and they have to like fight their footing. So it's such a great found family story that I really loved it from the beginning. And at first, it seemed a little bit more like a week-to-week kind of thing, more episodic. It wasn't necessarily like a whole broad thing that was happening. But then we got season 2, and we got so much character development from all of the members of the Batch. And then we obviously lost Tech, which to me was so devastating. Because
my boy, RIP, Tech.
I fell in love so much with
no one's
that
ever
character,
really gone.
I know. But still, it was really heartbreaking, especially because originally, it was so Hunter-focused, I feel like. Mm-hmm. And starting with season 2, we started getting to really know the other members so much. And then the last season ended on such a sad note that we knew it was going to start.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty grim. But it was still kind of jarring, especially that first episode, Confined, that it's all, like, really Imperial. Like, you can see her looking outside that window, and it's, like, such a lush, beautiful planet. Mm-hmm. And she's just, like, stuck in gray, just really sad to see kind of, you know, Crosshair completely losing hope and be like, just leave me alone, forget about me. So it was really grim, but it was so well done. And I thought it was a really good decision for them to do those 3 episodes, because then by the time we get to Shadow of Tantus, we end like on a higher note. So mm-hmm. I think all in all, it's a really good start to a season. I felt, I remember by the time we ended the three episodes, I was like, that was good Star Wars, and that's a really great way to start a season. So,
yeah, one thing that I wanted to like just piggyback on that was back in season two when it ended and Mount Tantus was reintroduced, I guess.
Yeah.
Everyone that pretended that they knew what Mount Tantus was, I knew you were pretending. I knew you were. You Wikipedia'd it, just like I did. We all read Heir to the Empire. No one remembered, okay? Stop pretending. It's okay to not know.
Yeah.
The same. Let's not open old wounds. It's fine. It's fine. Molly, how about you?
From the beginning, I was kind of the same, feeling a little bit the same about animation. I loved Rebels. I was never that attached to the clones because I didn't grow up watching Clone Wars. I watched that well into adulthood. And so I was kind of like, I'm sure it'll be fine. Like, Clone Wars was fine. It had some really high highs and some low lows. So I just expected the same from Bad Batch. But somewhere between season one and season two, I was like, wow, the writing in this show and just the way that they are showing us these character relationships, it is like some of the best Star Wars content out there.
Mm-hmm.
Like, some of it is better than, you know, some of the live action shows, in my opinion. So I started really, really digging it in season two. When we started to learn a little bit more about each member of the Bad Batch, and then Crosshair's storyline was just so interesting, and they were not afraid to just really go there with his story of like being like, when we find out he doesn't have the chip in his head and he's still working with the Empire, everybody was like, oh my god, that's so dark.
I know. And just like devastating, honestly, when you first find out, it's like, what?
And getting into season three has been so good. You're right. The first three episodes work so well together. It sets you up to really understand and get a grasp of what Omega has been through. I love the time jump of her at Mount Tantus. Putting the notches in the wall. And
so good.
She starts out with Emery kind of having to show her what to do, and then once the time jump happens, she just kind of gets up and it's like routine at that point. She's she's just going through the motions, and it's so good. I loved everything about it. The music this season so far so good. The Kyners always knock it out of the park.
Which credit to Lucasfilm for finally giving credit to all three of the Kyners.
The whole family's Kevin, there,
so especially Deanna. Big shout out. So that was really cool to see.
So I'm loving it so far. The first three episodes were so well put together, and it does really leave you feeling hope. We're kind of like Crosshair, where we're starting out kind of depressed, and then by the third episode you have a little bit more hope, like he does. So it was really nice.
It's actually very interesting, because I feel this is like the MO of Lucasfilm Animation at this point. Just like, we're going to give you a first season that's a little, like, I don't want to say mid, but for lack of a better word, kind of mid. And then that's the bait and switch. And it's like, aha, no, this is going to be brutal. It's going to be emotionally devastating.
Guard your heart.
And I think that they do such a good job with it, because same thing. Clone Wars was kind of like the same thing. It starts and it's a little on the goofy side of, okay, maybe it's not goofy, but it, you know, doubles down on like being a super dark, you know, treaties of war and what soldiers have to go through and all of these things. And by the end of it, it's just like killing people left and right. And I was like, this is not a kid's show. This is Saving Private Ryan. You know, all you're missing is just blood and guts, basically. And Rebels did the same thing. The first season, Ezra is insufferable and just like very child's animation, which is the target audience, right? But by the time you get to season two and three and ultimately four, it just grows into something that's just completely different, so mature. And I don't like to use the word mature, because like, you know, Pixar films are for kids, but they're also very mature storytelling. So use that cautiously, I guess. And Bad Batch was definitely the same thing. I don't feel like I was invested in the show when it started. I'm very cynical with backdoor pilots, because the minute like Bad Batch shows up in the final season of the Clone Wars, I'm like, okay, well, here's a spinoff show, I guess. Just like when Ahsoka shows up in Mandalorian, it's like, okay, backdoor pilot, here we go. So at that point, I was like, well, we'll see. It's Star Wars, so I'll watch it. But it definitely, season two kicked some ass.
Yeah.
Especially the second half, because I agree with you, Nani. Like, when Bad Batch was being episodic, I don't feel like I was as invested in it, because not to say that they were bad episodes, they're great too, but the standalone aspect of those episodes kind of made me feel like I'm in a bottleneck of sorts. And I was like, okay, well, whatever, you know, there's no investment emotionally from me, because like there's no larger arc. But once they started like doing that in season two, I'm just like, oh, okay, here we go.
I get you. I know what you're doing.
I see. Oh, Filoni saved. It's not Filoni. It's Brett Rao and like the rest of the team.
Jennifer Corbett.
Thank you.
Yay. She's doing a fantastic job.
So hopefully does a lot more. So we want to see a lot more Lucasfilm animation. Which I hope they tease us with something at the end of Bad Batch. But we'll have to wait and see for that. But yeah, season three has just hit on all cylinders. It's just dark, it's gloomy, there's no hope, but there's always hope because it's Star Wars. And we got a new dog. What's his Badger. Name? Batcher.
Betcha.
So good. Hemlock is evil as always. Emery, I think is her name. What's her deal? Nalase is good as dead. She's dead. Episode 4, probably. it's so good. Like, there's so many deaths left and right.
Glorious Palpatine. Yeah.
Papa Palpatine. Oh, can't get enough of Ian McDermott. We got Snoke in a vat somewhere, melting, probably. it's so good. Or it's Moff Gideon. Maybe Moff Gideon's in one of those vats. Who knows?
Yeah.
That's going to be the plot twist of the Mando movie. Moff Gideon was Palpatine all along.
Oh, no.
somehow Palpatine returned. Always. So, hitting on all cylinders. So, this is me being silly, obviously, but three episodes. What the hell were the names? Confined, Paths Unknown, and Shadows of Tantus. And I think one of the great things that work with it is the reason why Last Jedi, Empire Strikes Back, and all these like middle films work a lot is when you separate characters. And you have to see them kind of go through their own journeys, especially journeys that still relate to what the other characters are kind of going through, then have that cathartic moment of them coming together, which I'm going to call it now. It's episode 6, which I thought it was going to be a completely different episode, but based on this, I was like, that's okay. I totally misread.
That's where it happens.
Blink twice if I'm right. Anyway.
Goose, no.
This channel is not affiliated with Lucasfilm or Disney or any of those subsidiaries. So it's fine. Any initial reactions that like you had while watching like Confined that meant, you know, like this season's gonna be something completely different from what we've seen?
I agree with Molly. That time skip, like we knew from the trailers that it was coming, but I wasn't necessarily expecting it to come so soon. So I love that we just like hit the ground running and we're not like, there's no filler. It's just like straight to the story. It drags you in right away. And then what you also said, Molly, about like the ticking down the days on the wall. And it just felt like the whole episode was kind of about time, because there's also like the drops of water in the sink and then the vials of blood, like as they turn around. So it's all of this making you feel even more confined. Mm-hmm. So, and to see it from the point of view of Crosshair, who at this point has lost all hope, and it's just like, just let me die, just think about yourself, don't worry about it. And then Omega, who, even though it's become, everything has become so repetitive and mundane, and just it would, you know, that kind of just horrible life of no new expectations would wear on anybody, and how she never lost hope. And the whole time she's planning, and she goes over to Crosshair and has conversations with him regardless of if he wants to listen to her or not. And it shows such joy in the character of Omega, and especially to see her doing so much things on her own. Because one of the things that was bugging me in the past was like, even when they started to acknowledge her as an older person as a member of the batch, they were still super overprotective. So it was really good to see her shine on her own.
And not just that, but see like all the different qualities of all the different members of the batch be reflected in her.
Yeah.
She's, you know, she has all the knowledge that Tech gave her of flying the ships and knowing all the plans. She's, you know, Tech, she's the mother hen, just like Hunter is like the you know, the papa bear of the group. She's also random like Wrecker is. So to kind of see like all the abilities of the batch, you know, distilled into her, it's kind of cool. But I think the coolest thing about Omega this season, new haircut.
New haircut! The
haircut is fantastic.
I was like,
really working.
Yeah, I was like, it is. Girl.
She's rocking it.
It is. Molly, how did the first episode make you feel? Do you feel it dragged? Because one thing that I feel that some people have been saying on the socials, God damn it, is that these episodes have been like Andor, for better or worse. I say better because I love Andor, but a lot of the criticisms that some media illiterate people, and if you were one of them, this is a joke. I care for you. You can like whatever you want. People that don't like Andor is that it's too slow and too methodical and takes its time too much. And in a way, the first episode of Bad Batch was very much that way. It was kind of like an Arcana 5 episode, right? How did you get those vibes? Did you enjoy those vibes? How did, you know, how is this new Bad Batch, you know, atmosphere working for you?
I love it. I loved Andor too, and I love how it does take its time with things. And, you know, we don't get that very often with the animated shows. And so it was really nice to see them starting it off in that way. And because of the subject matter, you know, it's supposed to be showing you like how sad and depressing this whole situation is, yet Omega still clings on to hope, and she's not going to give up on Crosshair or Thatcher or getting out of this place. So I loved all of the like almost like metronome ticking, the water droplets, the clock like blood sample thingy, and the music too had a lot of moments where it was just a very like metronome sounding tones, and it just got you into that mindset of she's doing the same shit every single day.
And the drudgery of
the
work.
And it's just like, oh my god, like she never gives up hope, and she keeps looking out that window, she keeps talking to Crosshair, even though Crosshair is like, I belong in here, and she's like, none of us belong in here, you know. So I loved how the vibe started out with this first episode. It was a really kind of quiet episode, but those are the ones that I really pay more attention to, so I didn't think it was slow at all.
And her making her doll from hay.
Yeah, the Lula.
Yeah.
We got two Lulas now.
Broke my heart. You see her so painstakingly and then going to sleep with her doll.
I thought she was going to be making like a rope or something at first.
I thought so too, actually, yeah.
And
you see her like at the window with it, and I was like, oh, she's trying to escape already. Awesome. It's like, no, she just wants some comfort.
Oh, my heart just like sank in that moment for her. I was so sad. And then when Emery takes it away, I was like,
you're not my sister anymore. You're the opposite of sister.
Emery's a really interesting character because I feel like she represents a cautionary tale of what life would have been for Omega if she had just kept her head down and kept working for Nala Se and then working for the Empire, and
never meeting the Bat Batch, and
never meeting the Batch, just, you know, doing what she's told. It does feel very much like a cautionary tale, but I also think that I think there's something with Emery. She ends up giving her doll back, thank God.
Right.
She's not a total monster, but we saw Emery, you know, try to connect a little bit with Crosshair in season 2. And now giving the doll back in season 3 with Omega, I think she's gonna make a turn at some point for the better. Hopefully, I want to see her do good.
Quick vote: when she, because Star Wars has a pretty bad record on how they reward people that, you know, see the light. So quick yeah. vote, does she die? I think she did.
I hope
redemption
not.
Arc death. Yeah, yeah, thank hope. You Star Wars for that. Yeah.
Yeah. I've heard a couple of people have theories that maybe she joins the batch.
Mm.
Like not
immediately gets killed.
Not that anyone could ever replace Tech, but she has kind a lot of that the role. Same yeah. qualities that Tech has, mm-hmm. kind of a smarty pants. Some people are like, maybe she replaces Tech.
And she wears glasses?
And she has goggles.
Yep.
Oh. Okay, maybe she does. Maybe she lives. Maybe she lives. Okay.
She needs to do the work to redeem herself.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
And then we'll see if she's even allowed to join the batch.
Yeah. Especially after she ratted on Omega at the end and almost got caught, you know. So. Yeah.
But to be fair, okay, let's play devil's advocate with that moment. She was only doing it because she thought it was in her best interest.
Sure.
She wasn't doing it to, you know, like, oh shit, I gotta tell on you. She's like,
you kind of like punish her, but it wasn't that. Yeah.
Because remember, Hemlock's already brainwashing everybody about how dangerous it is out there and how everything's out there to kill you, even though everything that's out there like is going to kill you has been engineered by the Empire to kill you. Mm. So it's not as if the outside of Tantus is what's the danger. It's still the Empire that's going to get you. So it's a interesting balance, which I think is one of the great things of the design of Mount Tantus, too. It's the, you know, the corruption of nature by the Empire, which is the thing that they always do, is just take the natural and just destroy it for like these mechanical evil ways, which I think is great. And even though no one remembered that Tantus was an heir to the Empire, myself included, now we do.
That's a good segue to the second episode, how the Empire just takes nature and messes with it to the point of no return.
Yeah.
Which a great episode, because it reminded me of so many other movies that I grew up watching. Jurassic Park, especially it reminded me a lot of Jurassic Park 3. Because, you know, the little kids stuck in Isla Sorna, or whatever the hell the name of that island was, has to survive eating Butterfingers or whatever the hell it was from the vending machine. You got Alien/Aliens. All these different sort of Rambo, Predator, all these different survival
movies.
Some
Indiana Jonesy.
So, it was a great action episode. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, it wasn't an action episode. It was kind of like a horror thriller episode, which saw the return of Daniel Logan as not Boba Fett, but, you know.
As
younger
Reg.
Clones.
Reg number 3. Well, he had a name. I forget what his name was.
One of them.
Yeah.
We're not doing Star Wars trivia at Dragon Con. We don't need to remember that. And I apologize to the person I hit with the Prosecco cork. It was not my fault. It was my fault. I shouldn't have taken off the...
They're going to make you check the Prosecco at the door next time.
They will. But also, they did follow me on Twitter the next day. So.
Oh, okay, good.
So there we go. Nani, what did you think of the Predator episode? What the hell was it called? Pat's Unknown.
Predator. And yeah, I also got a lot of like Lord of the Flies, you know, vibes out of it too. And again, with the comparisons with Andor, because it felt very much like what happened at Andor at the planet where he grew up, where
Casa. Yeah.
Completely corrupted by Canary. The Empire. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think it's so cool to see that the Empire, it wasn't just what we saw in the films. There were all these atrocities happening in other planets that we were never privy to. And now we're finding out, you know, kind of the extent of everything that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought it was really cool to see, you know, these younger Regs who never really got to be soldiers because, you know, the war was already over and then they were abandoned and they have less of a place to belong than the Bad Batch. And to see, you know, two people that resemble the ones that abandoned them to have such camaraderie and to be able to, you know, fight for each other to the point that they've lived for years, you know, just surviving, and now suddenly they actually want to come back into the fray and help people, even without you know, knowing that they're risking their lives and knowing that they're technically not getting anything out of it. And then by the end of the episode, kind of like being able to get a break, like when they tell them we have a place where you can live and find a home and and you can find, well, we'll see what happens.
But that's gonna, but, I saw the trailer.
Oh, Pabu. Pabu is not safe for long.
No good can last in Star Wars.
Yeah, which is so sad. But it's still, it was so nice because the Bad Batch has been trying to figure out this whole time how to be more than just soldiers. But since their mission isn't really over, they haven't completely finished being soldiers ever. You know, now they're mercenaries or whatever it is that they are. But these kids, you know, them having to tell these kids, now you have to figure out how to not be a soldier and be something else and find a new path. So I thought it was very kind of reflective of the journey that the Bad Batch has been on so far, just through these younger versions of Regs. And I thought it was really nice.
Yeah, it's like they kind of come full circle. You know, we spent like the whole first season or so with them trying to grasp the idea of not being a soldier. What are we supposed to do if we're not that? And to see them now giving this advice to these young Regs of like, you can do anything you want with your life. You're not a soldier, then that's okay. And yeah, it's progress. We love progress.
I know.
Yeah, we do. But let them live. Because I think that's the cool thing that the show has done with the clones, because if you only look at the movies, the clones are just clones. They're just a disposable army, just as disposable as the droids. But I think the new ones that started with Clone Wars and that the Bad Batch is really hammering is that aspect of kind of not just individuality, but also the mirror, because they're literally, you're seeing yourself. It's not just the hypothetical, walk in someone else's shoes type of thing. It's just like, no, you are that person. But so you can like see their journey, because it could have been your journey, because you are the same person, but you're not at the same time. So I really like that duality that the show gives you, especially because it's not just, you know, one person to one person in the same moment in their lives. It's, you know, at those different times with this episode, with them as kids and them as adults, and then being able to see each other still. It's like, oh, I could have been you, or that's both ways between youth and older age, because the Bad Batch is not that old, let's face it, but you know, I guess war ages you quicker, not just aging can be known in technology. So that's kind of a cool thing, especially because since they are separated from Omega, it's that way to bring back the whole wrecker hunter protector uncle relationship with Omega, but without her. Just like, there's just a way that we're growing that relationship without actually having to have her as a character there, which I think furthers their journey, because it's like, you can have that relationship through other people as well, not just within your whole nuclear family. So whole found family stuff that I thought was really great, and especially because you're mixing it in with some, you know, nice monster horror stuff with the vines that reminded me from Jumanji. I'm just like, are we in Jumanji with the vines? Is Robin Williams gonna pop out all of a sudden with a loincloth or something and yell? I don't know. It was great. I loved it. And the face huggers, you know, we got
the little ones. Oh, yeah. I was like not okay with those. I was like, oh my god, they're just legs and teeth, and I hate that.
Yeah, they were super creepy.
Nightmare fuel.
They were clearly inspired by Alien, but I'm glad that they toned down some of the innuendo. The alien face huggers have not for kids. Let's put it that way. I did like the end, though. Spoiler alert, obviously, when they're escaping and then the giant butthole tries to eat them. the water sarlacc. It gave me Fellowship of the Ring vibes when the giant octopus is trying to take all the fellowship from entering Moria. But it mostly reminded me, I don't know if you guys played Shadows of the Empire when you were young whippersnappers, but it reminded me of Shadows of the Empire and Caesar's. How the hell do you say
Caesar?
Say Caesar. Okay, because I never know how.
That's how I say it.
I never knew how to say it, so I would just read it in Spanish, and I would just say Caesar. so Caesar. Okay, thank you. It's just like I used to think that Aeropostale was pronounced. This is so embarrassing. I thought Aeropostale was pronounced Aeropostale. So I would just say that
Honestly, that sounds way better.
I would just say that in grad school, because I did undergrad back home in Puerto Rico. So grad school I did in Illinois, here in Illinois. So everyone would be like, what the hell is Aeropostale, Goose? And I'm just like, the store. The store that's males and it has the male models on it. I don't know. And I was like, Aeropostale. I'm like, oh, okay. Well, I guess I'll shut up forever now.
I guess I could say it the boring white way, sure.
It's like, please don't judge me. So never again. So now everyone knows it. All 10 people that listen to this. But yeah, so it reminded me of the bottom of Cheezor's Palace with the giant Dianoga that you had to fight underwater with the jetpack and everything, which was one of the most terrifying experiences of my young life.
Yeah.
I had a very easy life, fortunately, I guess. And that was like top 10 terror in my life, fighting the giant Dianoga. So I kind of felt for the batch in that moment because I was like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
I feel it. I was Dash Rendar. I was with you.
It was exciting to see them, though, like tossing a handful of grenades down there, though. Like, yeah. you know, Wrecker was excited to do that. He was waiting to blow something up.
He was like, finally, it's been days without blowing days
since I got to blow something up.
It's like, Hunter, we have a surplus. Yeah.
I need to use them now.
But something from the episode, though, that I just remembered that is not talked about enough is that the queen herself, Angelica Houston,
yeah,
plays a queen. I mean, I don't know if she's a queen, but because she's a queen, goddammit. So that just, this is now responsible speculation, I guess, and if you know the answer to this, blink twice. But you don't bring Morticia Adams to just be on one episode. So stuff's going down as she takes a large gulp of Sprite.
I knew I recognized her voice as soon as I heard it, and I was so excited to figure out who that was. But I mean, yeah, you would think to bring someone like that on. She's done Star Wars before. She did the Sith Mother in Screecher's Reach. So,
holy, that's right. I forgot about that.
Maybe they were just like, hey, while you're here, maybe do this other voice. Yeah.
Crossover episode, maybe?
Maybe. But it was funny when I first saw her character, I was like, that looks like a Baldur's Gate 3 character with the horns and everything.
Yeah. I know Chase is going to love it.
We'll see.
That is Chase's picture on my phone. Is their Baldur's Gate costume cosplay. This is a total non sequitur. When is a costume a cosplay? Is it when it's outside of Halloween? If it's Halloween, it's a costume. If it's outside of Halloween, it's a cosplay.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say.
Okay. I can sleep at night tonight, I guess.
Yay.
Mysteries of the universe solved.
Mysteries. Stay tuned, guys. Try out of this force. We answer all your burning questions. Not about Star Wars lore, but about when you can call your costume a costume. But I thought one of the great things that I did love about then now episode 3 was what I was hoping for, which I didn't necessarily expect it, was that Omega and Crosshair escape. Because I thought there was going to be the prison break-in, like Hunter and Wrecker, and it was going to take longer, but I did love that it was just like,
You called it, Goose, when we were talking about the trailer originally. You said, I call that they're actually going to rescue themselves.
Did I?
I think you did. So when I was watching, I was like, damn, Goose got something right. Because, you know, our responsible speculation always fails. Like, we always get everything wrong. So I was like, look, it happened.
3 years of podcasting. I got one thing right.
And you're so surprised that remember making the call.
I absolutely purge everything I say after we record the podcast. It's just, I'm a completely different person afterwards. But yeah, that was cool because now we can get to the meat and potatoes of the show quicker and because I think that's gonna be a really cool thing now. It's having Hunter and Wrecker go to Tantus to break them out, and then they get captured, because they're not there anymore. So now Omega and Crosshair have to, well, and obviously you probably know a lot more than, because now we're in the responsible speculation part instead of actually discussing the episode. But yeah, it's going to be a whole thing. We'll discuss it at the end of the episode. Let's stick to the episode. But yeah, Shadows of Tantus, Papa Palps is back. Dope as ever with the red guard that never does anything but looks fly as fuck. So good. So good. Nala Se being sketchy and being like, girl, you got to get out of here, yeah. Girl. Go run away.
She needs to talk faster. I was like, yeah. Spit it out, Nala Se. We don't have time.
You're wasting your time.
Well, yeah. I'm not an expert on Kaminoan anatomy, but based on that long neck, I'm just going to assume that her vocal cords are like all the way at the bottom.
It takes a while.
So the air, as that comes out, it just takes a minute.
That makes sense.
I'm going to get my Daniel Jose Aldo gavel. It's canon.
Canon.
But yeah, how was that experience for both of you seeing Palpatine return and the return of one of the terms that I love the most from The Mandalorian Season 3, Project Necromancer.
Such a good evil name for a project. You know, the music that starts playing when Palpatine is arriving, you're like, okay, only one person has music like that.
Oh, right.
It's Palpatine. Yeah. And I guess I was kind of shocked that he was showing up already. Like, I figured Palpatine wasn't going to show up till a little further into the season, but here he is coming in episode 3. And I love that Hemlock is, like, so excited to tell Palpatine about, like, everything else they have going on at Mount Tantus. And Palpatine's like, I don't care. Show me the clone business. Like, I need to...
That is all I care about right now.
I need to know about my stuff. I don't care about your stuff.
He's like a teenager showing someone, like, their rooms. Like, this is my rock collection, you know?
Yeah. It's like, I don't care. Like, yes, I don't care about the rest of your science.
Right. I'm just here to do homework. Yeah.
But yeah, when he goes into the like, super secure, like... all the laser beams that they have to go through. I was like, damn. But when he gets in there, it's so cool and creepy in that room. There's like Sith runes on the floor. And we don't get to see like what's in the vats, which is so frustrating. But
I mean, it's definitely him because the smile he gave, it's just a smile that you give yourself in the mirror. He's like, look at that handsome devil.
Look at that smooth Palpatine in there.
Look at that pre-melted skin. Yeah, take that, Mace Windu. You can't come back from your shit. But well, maybe he can. Who knows? Of course, based on what Sam Jackson said. But Nani, what was your reaction to the creepy? Well, we can't really call it a catacomb. Oh, we could. They're dead as long as they're not with midichlorians, right?
Yeah. Again, I was really surprised that they did Palpatine so soon. I mean, as soon, like you said, Molly, when the music shows, I was like, yeah, Palpatine. And Husbando was like, no way, they're not doing him so early. And then there's Palpatine. And it's like, oh, okay, well, I guess I was wrong. But there was like such an aura of menace as there always is around him. But now knowing what we know about Project Necromancer, that by the way, I didn't think they were actually going to drop the term. And no, when they said
project,
like,
I'm like, say it, it's necromancer. It's necromancer.
like you were saying, they did the thing. Yeah. So there's like, I always love more when they keep things shrouded in mystery. So yeah, like you kind of know what's going on, but you don't necessarily have to see it. So even though it was frustrating to not see the vats, at the same time, it's just like, it just adds more mystique to it. Mm-hmm. So I thought it was really well done. And especially like so early on that, you know, we already have this menace right there from episode 3 that's going to be with us for the rest of the season and, you know, beyond, because obviously we know from The Mandalorian that this keeps happening. But yeah, I actually thought it was really well done because I feel like there's like different tones to the 3 episodes, but it's kind of within the same space. So it adds to, you know, it feels like you are in the midst of the story and, you know, we're just getting started, but be scared already.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah, we know.
Hit the ground running.
Project Necromancer, because it was mentioned in The Mandalorian, where you're like, that's 30 years after this.
That's exactly what I was thinking, yeah.
They are really trying to get this project off and running and it just, like, they can't seem to do it. So,
yeah.
Well, if you think about it, it's kind of the same time frame as the Death Star, because the Death Star was being designed since Attack of the Clones. So
true.
If we know something from Papa Pops, he may have plans on top of plans, but efficiencies and deadlines are not one of them.
Right? Yeah. It's just like they're the go-to backup plan. They're like, well, I guess we'll keep working on Project Necromancer some more. That's got to work, right?
Yeah. It's the pet projects. Like, okay, well, there's some downtime. Just go down to the basement, to the creepy basement, which I thought was really cool that they had like all the laser doors from Phantom Menace. But instead of being like beautiful Naboo chrome and bright things, it's just like opposite. It's just like corrupted Naboo stuff, because obviously Palpy is from Naboo, so it's just like dark and evil. It's kind of like Vader's fortress to an extent when you get in there. So I now, like, I don't want to like get ahead of myself and go into the responsible speculation portion of the episode, but like I watched that, I'm just like, so if, like you were saying, Molly, if Peleon is talking about Project Necromancer 30 years later, does that mean that then the Batch destroys Mount Tantus this season, and then they have to relocate the cloning crap to Exegol? Well, no, not everyone knows about Exegol, but to some other location. Mm-hmm. And then, like, there's some, like, there's, again, plants on top of plants. There's a secret cloning facility somewhere in the unknown regions, but then there's a super duper secret cloning facility in Exegol. And that's where the melty Snokes are.
And then
and then the secret facility. I don't know. What's the Palpatine clone from Shadows of the Sith? Dagon, was it?
Oh, Dathan.
Dathan. No, Dagon's from Jedi Survivor.
Yeah.
Where's Dathan? You know he's in Exegol. We know that. So never mind. So yeah, I love the episode. I love that there's gonna be like that miss, you know, that cross thing of Hunter and Rick are just going somewhere where the people that they think aren't, and then Omega and Crosshair aren't, and Crosshair said Omega's name for the first time in 3 seasons.
Really?
I didn't believe that. I just saw it on the internet. I'm just like, well, sure, I'll believe the internet. But then I read it on StarWars.com, and I'm just like, okay, so it's true.
Really?
He loves her.
That scene when he says, I'm not them. I'm just like, oh, yeah. Mm. I was like, oh, Dee Bradley, calm yourself.
Yeah.
That was you're calm down. That was first episode. That was too hard. You gotta, just wheel me into it. But that was
he
a
kept
lot of
saying
emotion.
in all those interviews that people were gonna cry this season, and we were like, okay, pump the brakes, man.
It's like, you already
don't
killed,
do this to us already.
You already took tech from us. Don't.
I know.
Yeah. Which they, Omega and Crosshair had a nice moment in regards to tech when Crosshair was asking her, like, did he teach you plan number whatever?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he's like,
and she's like, yeah. And he's like, of course he did.
Of course he did. That was really sweet.
It was really sweet. It made me really
sad,
though.
I was kind of in the mindset for the longest time after season 2 ended that I was like, tech's not dead. I was just in denial.
Me too.
Yep. I don't know. He feels pretty dead now, but
especially
still
how,
like,
they opened the recap, and it's just like, him falling.
Yep.
Like,
yeah. I know. But I was super in denial when the moment actually happened. I was like, there's no way. There's no way he's dead. He survived somehow. And then as the months and the time has been upcoming for this season, I've been slowly losing hope, but I'm still, you know, a little bit really trying to grasp that maybe somehow.
It was painful because they did so much character development for him in season 2 that they didn't do in season 1. That I'm just like, at the time, you'll say, why would you do that if you're just going to take him from us? And then it's just like, oh, you did it, so it hurts.
Yeah.
Yep.
They were not afraid to go there, which I appreciate in an animated show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. True. So is Crosshair going to
Especially
fight
when
us?
You think that's like, I think it's especially telling because you kind of assume, especially when it's kids shows, that everybody has plot armor and they're all going to survive. So there's no stakes. And then you take tech away, it's like, oh, anybody's up for the chopping block. So it makes you like really afraid every time there's an episode and something dangerous happening. You're not taking another one from me.
That makes me scared for Crosshair now, because they made us hate him and now like him, and it's just like a roller coaster of emotion. And I know I'm gonna start liking Crosshair more and more.
Shaky-shakies in the hand
for sure. I know.
Yeah, and
that has me really worried.
Here's what's gonna happen.
Okay. Uh-huh.
there's gonna be a moment where he needs to, you know, it's gonna be like a Wonder Woman. Remember Wonder Woman, the sniper, the Scottish sniper who had the PTSD and was always like, couldn't take the shot. There's gonna be a moment like that with Crosshair. He's gonna have the cheeky cheekies and he's not gonna be able to do it. But then like Omega or someone's gonna be like, hey, Crosshair, you can do this. He's like, you're damn right, I can't. That was a bad accent. Hey, and then he does it, takes the shot, wins the day, blows up Mount Tantus, but
Crosshair safe.
Does a James Bond, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen the last James Bond, last James Bond thing, blows himself up too.
No, don't have him blow himself up too.
What if he's just missing if he doesn't have the toothpick in his mouth, he's a bad shot.
Maybe it's a nicotine toothpick.
Maybe that's the key to his really good aim, is always being able to chew on
that. Get that man a nicotine patch. Or a fume. That's the one that I see on the YouTube now, on the ads. It's the fume. It's the vaporless thing for smokers. Get tech the Crosshair that. He needs it. He needs it.
Yeah. He needs something.
He needs, well, therapy. Just like,
yeah.
Well,
anybody and everybody in the Star Wars galaxy
needs therapy. Yeah.
He doesn't need therapy now that he's got Omega. Like, now that
that's true.
Away and safe, she'll give him therapy.
But now, speaking of Omega, to kind of like start wrapping things up, one of the big reveals that, I mean, that wasn't really a reveal because I think we were all kind of expecting that since season one. Since she had like her beautiful pulpy haircut in season one, and we were kind of like, the force, and confirmed that she is and here's where I think the interpretation gets in. Not force sensitive. They just said that she
has
is
an
able.
Count.
Has, yeah. No, they didn't say that she has an M count. I think the way that they phrased it is that she's able to receive like the M count. Transplant
without degradation,
the bone marrow transplant for midichlorians, however that fucking works. Yeah. Yeah, so I guess that's, I think, the discussion now. What was the reveal? Is that she can accept the M counts, that she has midichlorians, does she have the force, and will she get the force? What do you think, Molly?
I wanted her to be force sensitive in season one. Now I'm kind of not sure if I want that for her or not.
Yeah.
I would kind of be happy either way, but much like Andor, I'm really enjoying this kind of like boots on the ground. What are the regular people of Star Wars up to? How are they participating in the rebellion aside from the Force, aside from the Jedi? So I would be happy either way, but I'm starting to think maybe she won't be force sensitive exactly, but maybe she has the potential to be, like the M count stuff.
What if it's a Grogu situation, like in Mando season 3, I guess? Yeah. Wait, Mando season 3 or Book of Boba Fett? Whatever. That's Lucasfilm's fault for doing what they did with Book of Boba Fett. Yeah. One of those Mandoverse shows where Luke gives Grogu the choice to be Jedi Mando. And maybe I was going to say Ahsoka, Jesus Christ. Maybe Omega, Ahsoka and Omega are related, and they're lesbian mothers to Rey. Anyway, that's not true, guys. Don't crucify me in the comments. she gets a choice. It's just like, oh, we can implant the M count, the midichlorians on you, so you can get the force sensitivity. But this is going to happen. And then she's like, I choose my brothers or whatever the hell. Or it goes secret invasion way. And then she's Emilia Clarke, and she's like, no, give me that juice. And she, just has ultimate force powers. What do you think, Maddie?
I honestly have no idea because, yeah, we had been toying around with the fact that she was probably force sensitive from the beginning. But like Molly, I started to really enjoy, you know, not all the heroes have to be force sensitive and can be powerful without it. It's more relatable, especially from the way that she's been raised now by the Bad Batch and all her experiences in Kamino and everything that goes with it. So I'm starting to think it's more of a, I think she was one of the steps into getting a Force-sensitive clone, but where they're not quite there yet. And somehow she's like that transition point where maybe her blood is like the medium to be able to make it happen for somebody else, but not necessarily for herself. So I'm not sure. I just think the fact that 30 years later, the project is still kind of stuck makes me think that Omega survives this, because I feel like if they would have gotten to her, the whole project would have, you know, had more advancement. Mm. So I'm going to take it as a positive thing. Yeah. But I don't know where they're going to go with it, really. And I think it's too early on to tell, but I don't think, have we actually seen moments where it seems like she actually has the Force? I can't remember.
In season one, at least for me, it felt like she had one of those like Leia Force moments where she's like, I can feel it, or that's like a connection. Especially that scene with Crosshair when she's kind of like, oh, I feel what you're going through, or something like that. It felt very Forcey, like she's, but that could have been like, hey, I'm a human, I can empathize with your feelings. Like,
yeah.
I guess you don't need the Force for that, because we do it. Or try to do it as humans here
without the <Yeah. others.
laughs> She's just really, really good at being empathetic.
Yeah. So that's, you know, whatever. fun stuff. So those are the three.
And honestly, if it's done right, I think you can go either way and it won't hurt the character or the story development, you know, as long as it's done right. And so far, the show's doing very good things.
They'll stick the landing, I think.
No, it really, I think one of Star Wars' biggest problems, especially since the sequel trilogy, is that they don't really have a plan. Like, they don't really know where they're going, and they were kind of all over the place. But this seems like it's very well thought out, and every episode has a place within the whole. So if they make the huge mistake of just like suddenly giving her powers and changing the character completely because of it, would be a disservice to what they're doing. And I really doubt that they'll do that, you know, from what we know of the season so far, I guess.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I concur as well. So yeah, we could be talking ad nauseum about these three episodes because there's so much to talk about. But I have only so much time, so let's start just wrapping up and go into some of our responsible speculation, which we have to tread lightly because Molly knows a little bit more, or X or Y reason knows a little bit more than we do. So, but before we get into that, I just want like a quick opinion from you, Molly, since you guys did your Dark Disciple deep dive, I don't know what time is, a couple days ago. Whatever, you know, maybe it was 2 weeks, I'm sorry. I don't know what time is.
It was last week, I think.
So you did that, you read Dark Disciple, you talked about it. Obviously, we know that in the book, Dark Disciple, spoiler alert, Asajj Ventress appears to bite the dust, as they say colloquially, but based on this trailer, she's back. You know, Jar Jar Binks, Misa back. That would be awesome if she says it that way. How do you feel? Because that's a point that Nani was making, right? About how the story is tight and how they're making sure that like everything makes sense in terms of a plan. But now we kind of see the whole thing just from season one, how it's retconning the comic and the whole Kanan thing, blah, 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 which I thought was stupid. So how do you feel about this that they're doing with Asajj and based on, you know, the books? I know that Brett Rao and Jennifer had said that they're, you know, being very cognizant of what happened in the book, and they're acknowledging it, and they're not going to contradict it. But how does that make you feel? There's always a visceral reaction to some of these things.
Retcons never really upset me. I'm always just like, half the time I'm like, what are they retconning? What's happening now? And Alex has to explain it to me, and I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah, it's fine. It's storytelling.
I care about what I'm watching at the moment. Right. If I read it before and it changes, I'm like, okay, fine. I think it'll continue to happen in little ways, because this universe, this canon universe of Star Wars, is just so massive, and sometimes stuff like that will just happen. But anyways, Ventress, I really liked Dark Disciple. It does appear that she dies at the end. If she wasn't dead, I would be questioning Obi-Wan and Quinlan their ability to tell whether or not someone is dead or not. They were like, well, I guess she's dead. Let's dump her in this pool.
And she's still alive.
On Dathomir.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm fine.
She's like,
She's going to come alive, crawling out of the pool like right after they leave. And she's like, you just left me here.
I got no right back. And Dathomir's creepy.
Yeah. But because she's, you know, a Night Sister, I think that there's some wiggle room there for whether or not she was dead forever from that moment. But as far as bringing her character back, I love the decision because a character like Ventress, she has so much in common with the Bad Batch. She's, you know, she's been cast away from the Jedi, from the Sith. She's tried to be a bounty hunter and, like, she's done all these things and she's kind of been cast aside by all of them. And so she has a lot in common with the Bad Batch, which I hope that they get to explore. And what we were talking about earlier, how Star Wars has this bad reputation of not showing us people getting the chance to redeem themselves and what that looks like. We are getting a chance now if they are in fact bringing Ventress back and bringing her back alive. Like, we get to see what that looks like, what her redemption is going to look like. And I think that's worth telling. That's a story that we want to see.
What if the last episode of the Bad Batch is just Omega just wakes up in Kamino and it was all just a dream.
We zoom out from a snow globe and it was all just like a little kid's dream, fever dream.
Nani, what are your expectations now going forward, responsibly speculating into, maybe let's not talk about the next couple episodes.
I think it's true, like, even these first three episodes are already tugging at our heartstrings, so I think there is going to be a lot of really emotionally impactful stuff that we're going to get to see. We're definitely going to see a lot more character development, which I'm all here for, and to see, you know, Omega grow up and to find her place among, you know, not only the Bad Batch, but in the greater scheme of things, because she can't always have them as a crutch, I don't think. I think something's going to happen that she's going to end up leaving them, I think, at some point.
Interesting.
But we'll see. I'm really excited that we got Logan back, because I've always wanted Boba Fett to show up in the Bad Batch, and now that the voice actor is here, it gives me hope that we are maybe going to get to see this and have the meeting of Alpha and Omega.
And one of the internet sleuths discovered that I think it's Omega holding the same type of blaster that Boba Fett uses, allegedly. So,
The EE9.
Sure.
Yeah, you know more than we do.
Okay, nerd. Okay.
And I think it'll be really cool to also get more from the Empire side, to kind of see really what's going on there as, you know, they start this, you know, hunt now for Omega, because it was so kind of funny that Hemlock is so hyper-focused on, you know, this research, and he's so hyper-focused that he can't see that his, like, golden egg was right in front of it. He's just focusing on Omega as, you know, a hostage to get Nalase to do her job, but he doesn't see the right in front of him that it's like it's her. It's you already have her, and then he had to let her go because otherwise he'd have to kill her, and then, you know, Palpatine would destroy him.
I mean, so, and it keeps with the themes of Star Wars, which is what Luke tells the Emperor, which is not just the Emperor's weakness, but the Empire's weakness. Your overconfidence is your weakness.
The Empire would never think that a little girl the size and age of Omega would come anywhere close to ruining their plans. And look what's happening.
Right? And it's the same thing. It's the same thing from Andor, when last episode 4, I think. It's like when Luthen and Andor and Cassian are escaping. I forgot the name of the planet. And Ferrix. And they're having that conversation. And it's just like, how did you steal the star path, whatever unit? And he's like, I just walked in and took it. And I'm like, what do you mean you took it? He's like, you just walk in like you own the place. They're so fat and happy, they wouldn't expect anyone that looks like me to, like, spit in their food and walk in their hallway. So it's kind of the same thing now. Like, she is in, and they don't even know that she's the biggest threat, because they can't even imagine it. So Andor, there we go, baby. Andor's the best. 2025, season 2.
Let's get an Andor Bad Batch crossover.
Well, speaking of that, that's one of the things that I was also thinking, because there's so many connections also with Mando season 3. Will we get, like, some more, you know, characters crossing into this, because we got Mount Tantus? So does that mean we're going to see Captain Paleon to some extent? I don't know if, Like, I'm iffy on the timelines here, but is Thrawn already in the Empire at this point? So can, like, there, we plug that in so all the Heir to the Empire nerds get their, you know, satisfaction of, yeah, Thrawn was at Tantus, and Jorah Sabaoth, or however you pronounce that, and Luke with 17 U's is there. Who knows? I think it's going to be the interesting thing. But then Crosshair blows it up at the end, so it doesn't matter. But yes, we can talk ad infinitum about this show, and we will for the next couple of weeks. It's going to be like a great season, not just because the show is great, but because we have a great lineup of content creators that we just did an all-woman guest schedule to respond to some of the allegations on the internet that women don't
Star watch Wars isn't for Star Wars.
So I'm just like, okay, challenge accepted. And it was very easy challenge to meet. So thank you, Molly, for, you know, kicking off the season with us and having like a spirited conversation as always.
Thank you guys so much for having me. I love that you're doing all women for this show. That's amazing.
It's gonna be great. You know, it's we're all about DEI. Actually, we're Jedi here: justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion. why don't you tell us a little bit of what Star Wars Explained has going on, and if you got any like future stuff planned, so that people who don't, surprisingly, might not know you, you know, are plugged into.
Yeah, so you can find us over on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Threads, Blue Sky, pretty much all the social medias at Star Wars Explained. And we are also covering The Bad Batch, believe it or not.
What?
Shocking.
We're competing? What?
Well, we don't compete with them.
No. Oh, this is all friends don't compete.
Yeah.
We'll lift each other up.
Yeah.
We're just doing our reviews, and we're doing live streams every Wednesday evening at 6 p.m. Eastern time, chit-chatting all about The Bad Batch, so check those out.
Yeah, that's great. And we'll leave, as always, links down below so that everyone can find your content. It's amazing content, so if you haven't, stop living under a rock, and please check out Alex and Molly. They're amazing, some of the best people in this fandom.
Oh, thank you.
Both talking about Star Wars and outside of that, I might add. So, yeah. But yeah, I don't know. Nani, did you have anything else before you're doing our beautiful sign-off?
No, I think we're done. I thank you so much, Molly, for joining us, especially on these first three episodes. We're so excited about this. And yeah, it was a really good conversation. So we thank you every single time that you come over here to the Triad.
Of course. Yeah, it's always a good time.
What about you, Goose?
No, I'm good. I'm good.
You're good? Yeah. Okay, so time to sign off. We are Triad of the Force. Remember to like, subscribe, leave a comment. Let us know what you're thinking about The Bad Batch so far. Thank you again, Molly. Look forward to episodes released every Friday where we continue to discuss this show. Like Goose said, it's going to be all women content creators that we're going to have here that as we talk about, because Star Wars is for women, okay?
I'm going to be the only sour spot on that. So sorry, guys.
You're fine. You know, we started this podcast together, so you're excused.
That's true.
So until next time, may the Force be with you.